there, and welcome to another edition of the Marlena program. I am Marlena, and this is the show for the week of March the 12th. Wow, what an abrupt start we had today, folks. We had no promos and, oh my goodness, here we are. Well, it's great to be with you. I am Marlena, and we are here in Seattle, where I am very disappointed because the Pineapple Express never came. And that just breaks my heart. I've never seen a Pineapple Express. Before we bring in our guest and tell you a little bit about the guest tonight, let me just do a wee bit of housekeeping. First of all, welcome to Daylight Saving Time, if you in fact celebrate daylights. I'm not sure it's a celebrate. However, if you live Daylight Saving Time, welcome to it. We will be at this time now until, I believe, Daylight Saving Time finishes now the second weekend in November. So, if you are listening to this program at any time other than 6 p.m. in the West, 9 p.m. in the East in North America, or on a Sunday night, or 1 Universal very early on a Monday UTC morning, you're listening to a repeat, and please put your feet up and enjoy the show. And you are listening to ACB Radio here at the Mainstream, and through WTNDLP Macomb. I have a fascinating guest to join us tonight. Joseph Hull is a graduate student at the University of Surrey in Guildford, UK, working in collaboration with the Division of Sleep Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. Joseph has been working in the field of human sleep and biological or circadian rhythms for almost 10 years. And for the last 5 years, he's concentrated most of his time toward assessing the daily rhythms in blind individuals with no light perception, or as Joseph is wont to say, NLP. I spent a fair amount of time on the phone with Joseph, sort of figuring out what we were going to do, and I tell you, it was hard to hang up. I think you're going to enjoy him as much as I have already enjoyed him. Hey, Joseph, welcome to Marlena.
Good evening, Marlena. How are you?
It's great to have you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, I didn't get my Pineapple Express, though, darn it.
I heard.
Yeah.
Tickets in, send me some.
Well, yeah, it's some weather front that's supposed to come in from Hawaii.
Oh,
I know. Let's, before we open the phones, let's talk a little bit about this. Kind of go back to the beginning with me, and whoever thought of sort of assessing the circadian rhythms in people with no light perception? Where did that all start?
Well, initially, I mean, as far as circadian rhythms research goes, it kind of started in the last century, the research all itself. And some of the first work was done in humans by a professor in Germany named Jürgen Aschoff. And he started doing studies where he would have individuals live in underground bunkers where there's no windows, clocks, or any kind of knowledge of time. And the persons would live by themselves in the labs there, without any contact from the outside world, except maybe receiving food through from the investigators. But they were pretty much by themselves. They didn't have any knowledge of time of day, and they would live there for about 30 days. And during that time, their rhythms, like their sleep-wake schedule, would delay later and later each day. But it kept a regular 24 to 25 hour rhythm, where they would go to bed and wake up around every 24 to 25 hours. And they were doing other studies in animals where they found that if you put an animal in a cage and give them 12 hours of light and 12 hours of dark. They would be active during the dark period, and if these were nocturnal animals, that is.
Sure.
And if they would sleep during the light period. But if you put them in constant darkness, they would continue to show this activity-sleep rhythm every 24 hours, but it wasn't exact. It was around 24 hours and 10 minutes each day that they would begin their activity. And this would happen continually, very exact, about 10 minutes later each day when they're held in constant darkness for many days. And so they found out that light is a very important time cue for the biological clock. And at first they believed in humans we were different. They thought that light didn't have any effect. But in the 70s and 80s, it was found that light has a tremendous effect on humans, just like other mammals. And they found that in blind individuals who have no light perception, majority of them, they show this cyclic sleep disorder or sleep-wake rhythms where they may try to keep a 24-hour schedule, but they find that they may have periods of good sleep and they're alert during the day for a few days, maybe weeks, and then it's followed by weeks or months of disrupted sleep where they can fall asleep, but they wake up a few hours later. And then in the middle of the day, they have trouble staying awake. And then progressively, as the days go on, they again start to feel fine. They're sleeping well at night and alert during the day, but the disrupted sleep and disrupted wakefulness occurs again. And so that's pretty much how it was found that as we figured out that light was important for human circadian rhythms, was it shown that this is kind of like having humans, a sighted human, in constant darkness, so to speak.
Huh, that's interesting. And of course, that for blind people who have this issue, and I, as I told you the other day, happened unfortunately to be one of them, you know, it really makes it difficult, to hold a schedule. But I must say that, I currently have the fortune or misfortune to own my own business. And so I have much more control over my schedule. But I find that I have many more issues now with my sleep than I did for the years and years and years and years that I worked an 8-to-5 job. Has that been looked at, you know, in other folks? Or?
Well, you touch upon one aspect that's that can affect age. If a major factor that can affect sleep is age. As we get older, our sleep starts to become less intense, and the duration for which that we can stay asleep becomes less and less.
Oh my gosh, this is not boding well for me. Oh God.
So, but that may not be the whole story. But as far as age goes, if you've ever seen an infant, they sleep almost 12 to 17 hours each day in the first month of life, practically. But as they get older, the sleep becomes less and less, and then it becomes bimodal where they're sleeping during the night and they sleep during the middle of the day. So then when they become 3-4 years old, they usually start to wean out of having naps during the day, and they consolidate their sleep just during the night, just like adults.
That is.
But as we get older, for some reason, and researchers don't know why, people who usually, once they get past their 50s and 60s, they have no trouble falling asleep usually, but they wake up much earlier. And they don't know if it's a matter of whether the individual doesn't need a lot of sleep or whether they're unable to continue to sleep for a whole full 8 hours or 7 hours.
Talk to me about this study that you're involved with there at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and then we'll open the lines in just a bit, but I always like to try to give my guests a chance to sort of set their stage before the other folks come in the living room here and ask you the questions. So what is this study that you're doing?
What we're doing is we're assessing the rhythms of blind individuals while they live in the real world. So we're going to assess them while they're living at home, but it doesn't require us to come to their house. But we're going to take a look at their sleep behavior and figure out the times that they're sleeping during the night while they're in bed. And also, we're going to determine, we're going to look at a hormone during that time. It's called melatonin, which I'm sure everybody's heard of.
Oh, sure.
Melatonin is produced and secreted by the pineal gland. And it's a remarkable hormone because, especially within our research, because it's controlled by the body clock very tightly. And the body clock causes melatonin to secrete every 24 hours. And it'll peak every 24 hours. So what we ask people to do is collect urine samples over a 48-hour period so that we can look for these peaks to determine what time it is in the body. And usually when melatonin is peaking is when the body clock is promoting sleep, usually. And then there's another part of the cycle right before melatonin starts to be secreted that the body clock is promoting wakefulness. And this is kind of the part of the study that allows us to see why some people are having trouble staying awake during the day and having trouble sleeping at night, because we're looking for these peaks to change every day by about 20 to 30 minutes each day. It goes later and later. In sighted people, it usually just peaks during the night, and this is how light affects the body clock. It synchronizes or causes the melatonin to peak just during the night.
So then blind people, you're saying that our body clocks are significantly different? Is that a fair?
No, actually, that's a misconception. Sometimes I hear that they have a disrupted circadian system. Their circadian system is fine. The body clock is running at its own pace. The body clock doesn't cycle exactly every 24 hours. It usually takes a little bit longer. And what happens is the light that we get in the morning usually resets the clock so that it stays on that zone, on that time zone time, so that you don't have this continual delay. And in blind individuals, the majority of them, because the light input cannot get to their body clock, they can no longer reset that. And what happens is rhythms of sleep and the melatonin peak begin to delay later and later.
That is fascinating. You know, when I have traveled to Europe, I noticed that I didn't get jet lag, you know, and other people like, oh, my God, I'm so tired. And I was like, oh, not me. I mean, could that be a partial reason that my body clock was just sort of oblivious to these changes?
It may have been that if your system was not receiving any light, it may have been coincidental that once you reached the new time zone that you were at an appropriate, your body clock was just at the right appropriate time from when you went to bed and were awake during the day, that your melatonin might have been peaking during the nighttime in the new time zone, as opposed to before when you left, it was probably peaking in the daytime. Hmm. And that's another thing, is that blind people are usually, you know, they're not the only ones that can be affected by this. People who jet lag, as you were mentioning, even sighted individuals can have the same symptoms of having trouble staying asleep during a full 8 hours and trying to stay awake if they go across multiple time zones. And even there's been a lot of studies of the scientists who go down to Antarctica to do research.
Mm-hmm.
If they're there at a certain time, I believe it's the winter there, the sun hardly is ever up, maybe only for like 20 minutes. I'm not sure how long it stays up during the daytime in Antarctica, but they don't get any regular 24-hour light-dark cycle, and they have to depend on just the lighting that they have. And a lot of the scientists that work down there start to have this what we call a non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder, where they all just have trouble maintaining a 24-hour schedule. Their sleep starts to delay later and later and becomes more erratic. It's not as precise as if they were living near the equator where there's a nice 24-hour light-dark cycle, or
sure,
in the north.
Yeah, that's fascinating. The telephone number to call is 866-666-6667. 7926. Joseph will be with us until just about the top of the hour, and the line is open. What do you hope to do with the, I mean, why are you doing this study? What are you going to do with the results of it?
The results of the study will help us determine, one, we're going to test to see, there's another aspect of the research where people will live in our lab for two study visits, and we're going to test to see whether the retina has photoreceptors that detect light and send it to the visual cortex for vision. But in the last 10 years, a new photoreceptor was discovered, and it was always thought that there was only these two photoreceptors, and the visual system was just, the eyes were just for conscious vision. But they found that there's some blind people, even though they cannot see light, their body clock still detects light from the retina. And they found another photoreceptor within the retinal ganglion cells. And though they can't see the light, their body clock can still detect light to reset their rhythms. So we're initially going to find out people who are in the study whether this is still functioning, if they have this photoreceptor that's still detecting light and sending it to the body clock. And we're going to be testing different wavelengths of light to see what different colors of light have more of an effect on the body clock as opposed to just looking at white light. And then the other aspect of the study is to look at how does everyday life affect our rhythms, like exercise, just our activity, our rest activity, mm-hmm. where we mm-hmm. keep a regular 24-hour schedule. And we want to see if those things if we can use those aspects of your everyday life to help people who don't have that circadian photoreceptor that's working, who can't reset their body clock. Is there something that they do in their everyday life that might be able to be used to reset their clock?
Boy, I hope so. That would be fabulous. We have a call. Let's bring the caller in. Hi there, you're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, this is Stan, another person who has horrible sleeping
Stan pattern. The man from Oregon. Yeah, I know what you mean.
it is so terrible. I was trying to take melatonin for a while, but mm-hmm. I finally had to give it up because I had some pretty intense, horrible dreams.
Were you taking it every night?
Yes.
You were, right before bed?
Yes, probably about within an hour before bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I have part of a bottle that I have not even, that's probably way out of, I don't know if they go out of date, but if they are, this one's out of date because it was not worth the horrible dreams that I had.
So, so you mean the melatonin you think caused you to have horrible dreams?
Oh, I think so.
Have you ever heard of that, Joseph?
I haven't not done any research. I've talked to people that have used melatonin, and I have heard them tell me that they usually think they have very strange dreams when they use it.
It's very intense.
Very intense, like very vivid. Does it?
Yeah, very vivid, though, very real, and it is just plain horrible. And I'd heard this from other sources tell me that the dreams were, and believe me, these were bad enough where if I would have gotten and written down what was in the dream, I probably would have one of those B-movies that would get some sort of Academy Award that would make Stan a millionaire.
Wow.
I think that they should probably do some kind of assessment. Because usually in our lab, we usually, when people wake up, we usually schedule people's sleep and when they're going to be awake. And when they wake up, we usually ask them a bunch of questions about how well they thought they slept, how long they thought they slept, and how vivid were their dreams, how many dreams did they have. And I wonder if any of our studies that took melatonin, we could probably even look to see if they reported. Because there were some studies where we had a placebo they just took. Each person would... There was a group of people that would take melatonin before they went to bed and another group that didn't. And yep. I wonder if we could even look at that and see if that really holds up.
No, I have heard that. But I've heard, people varying the way they took it, but in terms of... because I know part of the thing, I used to be in radio, Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, I was busy doing what I was supposed to be doing. But now I am not doing that, but still, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning is still my wonderful time. Yay!
Wow, I'm glad I don't live with you.
And if I can, if something happens and I'm lucky enough to sleep in till, yes, friends, the bright, exciting hour of 8 o'clock in the morning,
whoa,
I'm happy.
Whoa, that's mm-hmm. that's a big sleep in.
I mean, this is ridiculous. I hate it.
Can I ask you a question, Stan?
Sure.
What was the underlying factor that made you want to take melatonin? Like, what have you heard? What did you hear about melatonin? Did your doctor prescribe it?
No, I'd heard that
they try melatonin.
I tried melatonin because it got a lot of press, and it talked about how it could, you know, help with sleep irregularities. And
because there's a lot of misconceptions about
right.
melatonin. It hasn't been studied a lot, and a lot of people will make claims that it helps with sleep.
Right.
And the research that I know, melatonin usually only helps sleep when it happens at the wrong biological time. And what I mean by the wrong biological time, back in reference to the peaks of melatonin that your own body produces from the pineal gland, it only peaks once a day. Usually in sighted people, it usually peaks in the middle of the night, usually maybe 2 hours before you wake up or before a person would wake up. And if a person, a sighted person who's sleeping at night and their melatonin is peaking, if they were to take a melatonin pill during the daytime when their melatonin inside their own biological melatonin is not being produced, it usually makes them sleepy and helps them sleep a little bit longer if they try to take a nap. But during the nighttime, from what I know, melatonin doesn't really make sleep any better. But melatonin for blind people has been shown to help them, but it doesn't help them sleep. Mm-hmm. It helps their body reset. And some study that my advisor, Dr. Lockley, has done, and some other doctors at the in Oregon, they use melatonin instead of light. They would give individuals a melatonin pill before they would go to bed, and they would. And Dr. Lockley, when he did his study, he had tracked the individual's own endogenous melatonin, looking for the peaks, the lane, and he waited at a certain point to kind of track when the melatonin would start peaking in the middle of the night. And then he would ask the person to start taking the melatonin pill right before they went to bed, and that was able to synchronize the person's rhythms. So the person had to take it every night after that. But the other thing is it didn't work for all of the subjects.
One more question, and I'll get out of here because I don't want to make room for other people. But have you also studied the area that's also a problem with people sleeping is sleep apnea?
In for me?
No, well, yeah. Have you studied sleep apnea as well, or do you just is that separate? Of course, that's probably
no,
separate method.
No, I'm sorry. No, I have not done any research in sleep apnea, but in the group that I work in, there is a sleep disorder section that actually does research and clinical work for sleep apnea.
Well, have a good evening.
All right, thanks, Stan. Take care. 866-666-7926. We have another call. I'm going to ask the caller to hold just 1 second. Just one comment that I want to make. I have sleep apnea on top of all this other mm-hmm. stuff. And I really hope you'll tell your sleep disorder people while you're studying this, would you please redesign those bloody CPAP machines? They're awful.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
It's tough, isn't it?
Oh, they're tough. Okay, let's bring this caller in. Hi there, you're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
Yeah, hi, Marlena. This is your sleep twin, Chris. I don't want Gary to
my,
get jealous.
Watch out now. Gary's in the other room, my sleep
I know,
twin.
But yes, I too have sleep apnea. There is a thing, if you do go to nomask.com, there's a thing that apparently you can put on your upper teeth.
Oh.
Because I use my sleep thing because I couldn't. The mask is just too claustrophobic.
Oh, I hate it. Oh, my
yeah,
gosh,
exactly.
I hate it.
But I should use it. But, Joseph, does the sun play a part in this? Because we can still feel the sun.
Well, there was at one point in time they thought that there might be another part of the body that might be able to detect light and actually signal the brain. And they thought where the skin is thinnest, like behind the knee or mm-hmm. you know, right on the other, opposite side of the elbow, where the skin is very thin, they thought that there might be some kind of substance in the blood that might react to light and actually somehow signal the brain. But other studies have found out that that really is not true,
yeah.
That there isn't any other kind of photoreceptor in the body that can send this signal to the body clock.
Sure.
Well, now, Chris, do you have difficulty falling asleep at night?
Oh, yeah, I do. Or sometimes I'll sleep fine at night, but then, you know, have a tough time staying awake in the day.
Yeah,
And at work, I was having, thank God I work home because I don't have to get up at 5:30 in the morning to get there at 8 o'clock.
Thank God I can work in my bathrobe.
So it's one of those nice things about working at home. People say, oh, you know, you got to get out and this and that. But I'm telling you, getting up at 5:30 is really tough.
Yeah. Now, I forgot to ask Stan the Man this, so I'll start my unofficial poll with you.
Okay.
Okay. When you go to sleep at night, do you require to listen? You know, do you have to listen to something to fall asleep?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
God, love you. We are sleep twins.
Yeah.
I just have this absolute belief, and if callers don't mind, when you call in, if you would tell me if you have to listen, I cannot go to sleep if it's silent.
Yeah, I have to have a talking book on or a radio or something.
Yeah, and it can't be music. It's got to be talking.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's me too. Generally, it's, as I say, a talking book or like Coast to Coast or something like that.
Sure, sure. All right, well, you're in Arlington, Massachusetts, so when Joseph gives his contact information, you know you ought to hook up with him.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
All right, well, thank you both.
All right, take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
866-666-7926. And we have another call. I told you you would be a very popular guest. Hi, this is Marlena. You're with Joseph. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena. It's Steve Bauer.
Hey, Steve Bauer. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I sort of live because of my wonderful sleep pattern by the old saying, early to bed, early to rise, your girl will go out with other guys.
Okay.
Hey-o.
So, I, as far as listening to something, generally it is talk, and generally there is something on. Once in a while I'll put New Age music on, just real quiet stuff, and that will help.
Yeah, I can do that if I'm already pretty much ready to drop. But if I'm sort of, you know, kind of in the, well, I still have some energy, but it's, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, I got to go to bed, then talk will help me fall asleep.
Right.
Yeah. So
usually,
Go ahead, Joseph.
Oh, no, I was going to say that usually, you know, people who have trouble, who usually have trouble with insomnia, they start to do, there's like yoga, I've heard, has helped. As you were saying, the New Age music, any kind of like relaxation techniques that you can do if you're having trouble to sleep usually help. I've also even heard that people who listen to rock music are more likely to fall asleep faster than people who listen to classical music, because classical music has more changes other than rock music that has like a beat to it. And I've heard that that's usually more helpful to have a constant beat than listening to the other changes in the classical music to different.
I saw on TV something advertised, I wish I could remember now whether it was 82, I think it was 82 beats, I think it was. And this is classical music that purports to be at the same, not the same beat rhythm as your heart rate, but in sync with your pulse. And it's supposed to help you to tune in to your mind, body, and fall asleep. Is that a bunch of hooey? Have you ever heard of that?
I don't know if I've ever heard that, but, when you go to sleep, that's, what happens, to your cortex, to the outer part of your brain, is that it starts to, all the nerves, or the neurons, start to fire in unison. Once you close your eyes and once you fall asleep, the neurons start to fire in unison. When you're awake, all of your neurons are all firing very fast when you're using different parts of your body. You're thinking, And some neurons tell other neurons to fire faster. Other ones tell neurons to fire slower. And it's kind of like chaos, but somehow the brain is able to interpret all this chaos. But when you fall asleep, your cortex, the neurons in your cortex start to fire in unison, almost like a heartbeat. And when you get into deep sleep, they're all firing all at once in a rhythmic way. And that's what sleep is. It's rhythmic. And you go through different cycles through sleep. So I think that may have something to do with it.
Well, I don't know, Steve Bauer. If we don't get sleep around here pretty soon, we'll be running the whole station on automation, I think.
Oh, I think so. Because I can, almost every night, I can fall asleep rather quickly.
Yeah.
But after about 3 hours,
yep,
it's just on and off. And
I don't know about you, Steve. I mean, you and I both have sighted spouses, and I mean, it's a real issue for me because I lie there and I think, I don't want to get up and make noise. We have a pretty small house. So I say, okay, well, I'm just going to stay here and try to go to sleep. And then that wakes me up even more than it would if I get up for an hour or two. And then all of a sudden I can be, oh, I'm exhausted and I can go back to sleep.
Well, sometimes mm-hmm. I'll sneak out and go into the computer room or into the guest room and, you know, listen to a book or whatever. And sometimes I will fall asleep. And then when the alarm goes off at 5 o'clock to get up to go to work, I'm hurting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm exhausted. Me too.
Right.
Me too.
So my question about melatonin is kind of a simple one. Are there different grades of melatonin, and is there a good or recommended place where one can get a good grade of the melatonin?
The only thing that I know about the melatonin that you might find in the drugstore is some of them come in different amounts. You might find a 0.3 milligram or 1 milligram or 5 milligram. And whether there's a better grade than the other, there hasn't been a lot of research to determine whether one grade is better than the other. And also, I would only recommend that you would talk to your doctor about taking melatonin and whether they think it would be wise to take it. Because there's not a lot of information about it. Although there's been a lot of research, there's a lot of conflicting research between places. And I guess I could only say is you should talk to your doctor about it. And we're hoping at some point to maybe have some kind of hotline or some kind of organization that individuals can contact us, and we can provide them and their doctor information of how to use the melatonin properly, instead of just taking it every night before you go to bed, to actually do some kind of assessment for about a month or so to determine your own melatonin levels and when they're peaking, and to appropriately time the beginning of ingesting melatonin before you go to bed, and then continuing to monitor your own melatonin levels to see if it's actually having an effect, and whether you're even reporting an effect that you actually are sleeping better at night, because your body clock is being reset and your melatonin is peaking in the middle of the night as it would need to promote sleep in the second half of the night. And once that's done, then you can know that every time you've taken the melatonin, it's still going to be working, instead of just taking it and never figuring out whether it's actually having an effect on your body clock.
Yeah.
And that's a major, and that's the one thing, too, is that the medical community and some of even the sleep community are unaware, or they don't really take circadian rhythms into account. And I think a lot of times people might be misdiagnosed, especially in the blind community. Their sleep disorder may be caused by the body clock not being able to reset. But if an individual who's feeling tired during the daytime and can't sleep at night, and they go to a sleep doctor and say, well, I fall asleep in the middle of the day, they might think that you have narcolepsy. And they may give you a drug.
Yeah.
And that will not take care of the actual underlying problem, which is your retina or your eyes have been removed and your retina is damaged and they can't use that light information to reset your clock each day. So, and it's the one thing is that a lot of, I think only sleep apnea right now is, you know, within the medical books is if you needed to get treatment, your insurance would pay for that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For this type of sleep disorder, and this is one of the major reasons why we're doing this particular research study, is to get more information to show the medical community that this is a major problem and it needs to be addressed, because it is quite expensive to do these assessments while a person's living at home and taking care of the assays to the urine samples that a person would collect,
sure,
have them
sure.
assayed, and you know, you wouldn't be able to get your insurance company to take care of that because the medical community hasn't really caught on to this just yet. And that's one of the major reasons why we're trying to do this research, is to get that information to show this is the problem and this is how we need to treat it.
All right, Steve Bauer, anything else?
No, I think this is an extremely interesting topic. It does deserve more attention, because if we could just sleep, we could get so much more done.
Oh, I know. And maybe some of us could even get jobs. Anyway.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to try to stay away.
Yeah, well, you do the best you
Good luck.
Can. Okay. Bye-bye. I think I have a lot of sleep twins here tonight. 866-666-7926. We do have another call. We're going to ask the caller to hold on for just a second. And now we'll bring them in. Hi there. You're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi there. I'm Tina from Colorado.
Hi there, Tina. Do you listen to anything before you go to sleep or as you go to sleep?
Usually the BBC World News.
So it's talk, okay?
Yeah.
There's
it's usually a low level.
Yep. It can't be too loud. Yep. There's a theme going on here. All right, let you talk to Joseph.
I also know somebody who listens to a talking book and flips it over every 90 minutes.
Oh my gosh, wakes up and flips it over?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Seriously, and now she has an MP3 player, and so she has a sleep timer on it, and so, yeah, so she likes that.
Let me let you get to your question for Joseph.
Okay, I'll actually have a couple different ones. Recently I'd heard that instead of, because I tried melatonin for about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months, a couple of years ago, and I would notice this consistent pattern where I'd take it maybe an hour before going to bed, I'd still have goofy sleep, but then I'd be really, really, really tired the next day, and I'm thinking, what's up with this stuff? And so we figured we'd can it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then recently I read somewhere that you're supposed to take it several hours before you go to bed. And I'm thinking, I haven't tried that thing, so maybe that was what would...
So is that your question? Are you supposed to take it several hours?
Yeah, are you supposed to take it, you know, I mean, because the hour thing, obviously...
Right. So,
you know, for me.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to move everybody along a little bit, because I just looked at the time. I'm so fascinated with the topic that it's like, so your question is then if you're going to take melatonin, when is the best time to take it?
Yeah. And then also, how much and does it matter? Or, I mean,
okay.
It probably does matter, but.
All right. I'm going to let you listen on the computer. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Bye bye. So what about that?
Well, as far as I know, taking it at least a half hour to an hour before bed is best. I don't know of any study that showed anything where a person took it 2 hours before bed, because there's not a lot of information. There's been numerous studies done, but from the ones that I know, the person took it a half hour to an hour before they went to bed, and they took it on a daily basis. As far as the amount, there's conflicting evidence of amount. 0.5 milligrams has worked. Another study said that you need 10 milligrams or 5 milligrams to do it. Some of those studies were only done in, like, one person, so it wasn't, you know, a lot of people to figure out whether that's exactly what you need. And I think as far as using melatonin to help blind individuals who have this ongoing cyclic sleep disorder, I think there's only been maybe 20 individuals that have been assessed, you know, have been monitored while they take it and they take it off. So there's no real answer to how much is needed that will do the job.
Okay.
But 0.5, I've heard, works.
Okay.
10.
All right. We have another caller. Let's bring them in. Hi there. You're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, this is Suzanne Erb from Philadelphia.
Hey, long time no hear. How are you?
I'm going to keep on going with your pattern.
Okay.
I listen to the BBC.
There you go. More talk.
At a fairly low level.
Right.
But it's always there. And I hope to be a participant in this study. I figured, you know, since I got laid off, I've got some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this could be valuable for everybody.
Okay.
Not just me. And I've gone through the... a good bit of the screening process so far, and I've just had my physical, and I'm looking forward to continuing. And I've just been so impressed by the professional level of the people that I've spoken with, and I would highly recommend other people get involved.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know what?
Thank you.
And when you do this, do call back in, you know, one of my open forum times and tell
mm-hmm.
us what's going on.
Okay.
I would like that.
Yeah, I'm sort of interested in finding out what it's like to be in this time warp.
Yeah. All right. Did you have a question?
I do have a question, and that is for people with no light perception and no optic nerve, you know, and those of us who have had our eyes removed,
yes.
I'm really curious to see what they're going to find, if that's how much of a bearing that's going to have.
All right. I'm going to let you hang up and listen
okay.
on your computer. All right. Thanks, Suzanne.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Sure.
And, of course, that also describes me. So I'm also interested in what you all might find.
Mm-hmm. Yes. From the study that we had done before, we've looked at people with different diagnoses of blindness, people with their eyes intact, their eyes removed, and then other people that of all the subjects, they had no light perception. The majority of them, when we gave them bright lights, we found that their circadian system was not reacting to the light.
Hmm.
But there was a small percentage that even though they did not see the light, they actually, their circadian system was receiving, their body clock was receiving light from their eyes.
And yeah, those are the lucky people who sleep well, yeah.
But it's a very small percentage,
but it's
one of the things that we want the medical institution to know is that, you know, people may have their eyes bilaterally enucleated for many good reasons, especially if it's cancer and this is the only way that
sure.
we can keep the cancer spreading.
Sure.
But there may be other people who, if we could test them before they decided to have their eyes enucleated, to test to see whether they still have this functional retina signal to the body clock.
Sure.
Because if they have their eyes removed and this is still intact and keeps their sleep-wake rhythms in sync with a 24-hour day, by removing their eyes, they may inadvertently start causing the cyclic disorder.
Mm. We have another call. Let's bring them in. Hi, you're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
This is Terry.
From
Phoenix, Arizona.
Can you speak up a little bit? We can hardly hear you.
Okay, this is Terry Hedgefest from Phoenix, Arizona.
You go. That's better, Terry. Sure.
Okay. So I had a question for you. I did sign up for the study, but I guess I wasn't accepted. I filled out
mm-hmm.
the survey and then it didn't, you know, come. That was back in August of 2006.
Yes.
So my question is, I had a few, but you've answered quite a few others have called in. Have you looked at people from different regions? So, for instance, Arizona, New Mexico, California, would their circadian rhythms be more synchronized to the 24-hour clock, perhaps, than, let's say, people from the extreme Massachusetts, Maine, where it's, you know, the light is more restricted?
Sure. Good question. I'll let you listen on the computer.
All right.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Huh? Yeah, what about that? What about that regional thing?
There have been people studied in England, people studied from California across, and people in the Midwest, Canada. I had people from Canada do a study. There's no difference. If the eyes are not functioning to transmit that light information to the body clock, there really is no difference. In sighted people, there are differences when you look at if someone's living far up north, and like I said, down in Antarctica, when the sun no longer becomes the major time cue, the sleep-wake rhythm can become disrupted. So, no, there's no difference between where you live if you have no light perception, usually.
Have you had any resistance from any portion of the blind community about even doing this study that you're aware of?
I've never personally had someone tell me that they didn't like us doing this research, but that doesn't mean that they're not out there, I'm sure. But I have had a lot of support, especially from the people I've talked to that have been interested in my study. The last study that I did, I probably talked to maybe 500 people who inquired about the study, and I got a chance to talk to them about what we were doing and why we were doing it, and even to talk about their own personal experiences. And they're usually fascinated by it and happy that we are doing it. So I usually get a lot of positive reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, even people who may not be eligible, always ask if they can help out.
That's great.
If they can help out with getting people and putting advertisements out. So we usually get a lot of support.
We have another caller. Let's bring them in. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Especially, no, that's okay.
Oh, okay.
One was what he said, because that's my comment.
Okay. Dave. Okay. What? You kind of came up in the middle of your sentence there. So why don't you make your comment, and then maybe you guys can put it together. Dave.
Oh, you want me to comment or him?
Yeah, you.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, you asked if there's anybody that's had any concerns about this survey, and that's what prompted me to call. I guess I would ask, is there a psychological issue that a person might have after this 5 weeks of basically being isolated from the world? I would not, I have to tell you, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. We haven't talked about the big part yet. Can you hang in with us a little longer, Joseph? Good.
Yeah, I can hang in as long as you want me to.
Nothing like putting you on the spot live on the air, right?
No,
you know?
That's fine. I have all the time in the world.
Okay.
I'm a sleep problem too, but I would not. I know that I would not be able to.
When I first heard about that, I was like, oh my God, and I wouldn't have my watch, and I wouldn't, oh my God, talk about that.
Well, for one, people that do our studies,
And I'll hang up and listen to you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
People who have participated in our studies, they're not isolated. The only thing that we keep them from is just knowing the time of day. There's interactions.
When you're a blind person, that's like so critical. I don't know how I could live without knowing the time of day.
And so, I mean, we don't isolate people. So they're not just put in a room and we just leave them to their own devices.
Yeah.
The lab that we have is in a hospital, so it's run by nurses and MDs that are there to monitor, to make sure that everything goes as planned and the person's okay. But another aspect that we do is our screening process is a little bit rigorous. But what we do is we have people interview with a psychologist to determine whether this is something that they want to do.
Yeah,
we would never just have someone say, I want to do the study, and then make them do it. So
yeah, you will live in the lab and like it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
That's one of the aspects that usually people are concerned about. But we usually take every precaution to make sure that this is something that you want to do, you think that you can do it, and that you'll have something to do while you're there to take care of the free time that you get.
Well, now, but you couldn't do things like you couldn't do email because that's time stamped, right?
Yes, but you can still receive email. So what I've done in the studies that I've run, I even had an individual who worked while he was in the lab, and I would receive his email from work or any kind of information in the mail and then give it to him. And I usually set up a personal computer in the room, which doesn't have a functional clock on it. So people have a personal computer that they can use, and this is what this one individual had done. And so he would give me a disk, and then I'd email it out. So people can still receive mail and email, but they wouldn't have a phone or be allowed to have visitors. But they would have constant interactions with the staff and the study coordinator.
Now, what about if someone had a guide dog?
Well, that's the one problem is, because of the nature of the study, we have people live in their own room individually. And because when we do that, we're going to schedule when you're going to go to bed.
Yeah.
And when you're in bed, we don't want you to be disrupted during sleep.
Well, actually, I'm thinking more of if you have a guide dog, your guide dog is on a schedule for eating and relieving.
Right.
So I guess that a person with a guide dog might not be eligible.
Well, it's not that they're not eligible. They would have to decide whether they wanted to do it without their guide dog there.
Yeah,
So that's usually an issue that does come up. We usually will try and help them out with taking care of the dog while they're away if they decide they want to do the study. But it's usually a volunteer. The nature of the study asks that we don't have any other animals or people living in the room while the subject's living in the room, except for the staff that need to come in and
out. Sure. Could I listen to my book?
Actually, no. Usually when...
Oh, God, I'd never sleep.
During the we schedule your day.
Yeah.
And when we have you in bed, we'll have the lights off, and you'll be in bed. And we usually have people hooked up to electrodes on the scalp and face, so we can measure
mm-hmm.
your brain waves during the time that you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a set time that we have you in bed, and no one can go in the room and disrupt you unless you need to go to the bathroom or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we ask that when you're in bed, that you try to sleep the whole entire time. And I usually tell people there may be an instance that you might wake up and you won't be able to sleep, but we'll ask you to just try to continue to try to sleep until someone comes in and tells you it's time to wake up and get out of bed.
Wow. We have a call. Let's bring them in. They've been very patiently holding. Thank you for waiting. You're with Joseph and Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena, it's Terry again from Arizona. I forgot to tell you my vote. I listen to instrumental elevator music, you know, like pop music.
Oh, now that's different. Okay. All right.
And that's how I sleep, and I can manage 7 to 8 hours a night.
Wow. All right. Thanks, Terry.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, she's the first one who really listens to music consistently. What about people who take the Rummerin, or however you say that drug, or the Ambiens, or you know, these new agey kind of sleeping pills? At least I think of them as being new agey. I know a woman, she may in fact even be listening. We discussed this topic recently on the listserv for the Washington Council of the Blind, and this woman said, oh my gosh, if I didn't have my Rummerin, I don't know what I would do. And she apparently takes it every night. Is that a reasonable...
You know, I haven't done any studies of sleep aids ever. And I usually my question is, when people tell me that they have trouble sleeping and they think they have a sleep disorder, my first question usually is well, how do you feel during the day?
Mm-hmm.
Because they usually say, I don't sleep a lot during the night. And I usually ask, well, are you tired during the day? Because a sleep disorder is just not having trouble sleeping. It's actually trying to... It actually is also having trouble staying awake during the day. And the two can go hand in hand, usually. But I once talked to a person who said he only slept maybe 1 to 2 hours during the day, or during the night, while he stayed in bed maybe 6 hours.
Wow.
At a time.
Boy, that's torture.
And he said, I think I have a sleep disorder. And he kind of said it nonchalantly, but I asked him, well, how do you feel during the day? He goes, oh, I feel great, energetic. And I'm like, well, I guess you really don't have a sleep disorder unless it's, you know, some kind of negative impact in your life. And he's like, no, I just don't like the fact that I can't sleep 2 hours.
Wow.
So I guess when it comes to sleep aids, if it helps a person stay alert during the day and it's giving them restorative sleep, then I guess that's great. But, you know, some people might use different tactics and other drugs to do the job, and usually they can inhibit a good night's sleep, which can also affect your daytime alertness.
Sure.
And for one instance is alcohol. Alcohol inhibits REM sleep. So you might be knocked out for 8 hours or 10 hours if you have been drinking, but if you deprive yourself of REM sleep, you can be just as tired during the daytime, even though you've slept for 10 hours. So I don't know much about the Ambien and how those things actually work, but I'll have to read up on them.
All right, and let's take another call, and then maybe we'll start to wind it down so you can get some sleep since you're on the East Coast. Hi, you're with Joseph and Marlena. Thank you for waiting. Who's this?
Hi, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Jersey.
Can you speak up a little bit? We can't hear you too well.
Yeah, this is Jim in Princeton, New Jersey.
Hey there, that's better.
Okay, I'm wondering if the experiment has been done of keeping nocturnal animals and people in caves in continuous light, if that messes up their rhythm. And related to that is, it seems to me that sighted people are in continuous light. You know, they keep the lights on at night. It's not
yep.
unnatural these days. And why doesn't that mess up their clocks?
Well,
good question.
No, that's a good question. Going back to the question of continuous light, you know, if you remember what I told you, that if we put an animal in constant darkness, they usually measure their activity by the running wheel. Rodents like to run on the, especially mice and hamsters like to run on the running wheel. And so they measure the time each day when they start that. And they usually start that probably about 10 or 20 minutes later each day while they're in constant darkness. And in other, usually in hamsters, I believe, and some mice, it might go to an earlier hour. But if you put these animals, usually nocturnal animals, not all of them, their running wheel will start each day to an earlier hour. But if you keep them in constant light, it'll go to a later hour. And they still have a 24-hour rhythm, but it just makes the clock shift to another hour. It goes later. It goes the opposite way than it does in constant darkness.
Wow.
So if the animal in constant darkness starts its activity 10 minutes later each day, if you put it in constant light, it'll go 10 minutes early each day.
How about people in caves, if you keep them in
People
light?
In caves, well, the studies that they did in the caves, they didn't actually live in constant darkness, and that was one of the problems with those studies, was that they allowed the person to pretty much self-select their light exposure. So they would go to bed later and later each day, but by going to bed later and later each day, they were making the light occur during their biological night, which actually can shift your rhythms to a later hour. If you give light, if you've been going to bed, let's say at like 10 o'clock every night, you're a sighted person and you're entrained to you're synchronized for the 24-hour day, when you expose your eyes to light at 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, it actually can shift your rhythms to a later hour. And if you give yourself light in the middle, or right before you get up, you can shift it to an earlier hour. And in the studies with humans, I've never seen anything with constant light. But in those cave studies and the bunker studies, they actually were giving themselves light that was pushing them to a later hour each day or to a later time each day. And I couldn't remember your other question.
Well, it seems to me that almost all sighted people in the United States anyway, they have artificial light and they keep the lights on, until they go to bed. So you would think they would get into that problem going later and later to bed. And of course, some of them do.
And
don't get enough sleep.
And before we let Joseph answer that question, let me just do a quick station ID. You're listening to the Marlena program on ACB Radio Interactive at the Mainstream and WTND LP Macomb. Okay, now we're legal. So that's a good question. What, why doesn't it mess up sighted people who sleep with the light on?
Well, the light in the middle of the night may not really mess up their rhythms. The fact that they're up in the middle of the night, let's say if you're talking about night shift workers, a night shift worker has to stay awake during the night, during their work schedule, they have trouble staying asleep, even though they're getting light, and that can be a little bit more alerting to them. When they go home, they're trying to sleep during the daytime, in the biological day, when their body clock is usually starting to promote wakefulness. And the light in the middle of the night really can't affect them negatively. It's just the fact that they're staying awake during the night and trying to sleep during the day.
I see.
That wasn't my question. My question is, you know, naturally the sunset and it gets dark at, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, something like that. But almost all Americans keep their lights on till 11 o'clock or so. Why doesn't that push them to, you know, mess up their
clock? Oh, I see. I understand what you mean. There's actually just a research study about teenagers. Teenagers have a...
Yeah, and lots of people do mess up their clocks, in fact.
Yeah, especially, and that's the one part is the weekends. People will stay up late, get that light, push themselves to a later hour, and then they sleep in, and they don't get that with their eyes closed. If they sleep later, they allow the shift to go even farther. And then when they wake up Monday morning, you know, their melatonin might be peaking right when they wake up, which is when the body clock is promoting sleep at the greatest point. And they have a very hard time getting up at that point. And the change in time that we just had today. That shift, that loss of that 1 hour has now just shifted everybody back. They've exposed that one part where they've already pushed later to a later hour, and now they're expected to wake up earlier because we've lost that 1 hour. And people usually, the amount of accidents that occur just after the start of daylight saving time, they spike. There's more car accidents. I heard that there's more car accidents the Monday after daylight saving time than Thanksgiving.
Wow, that's amazing.
The travel time of Thanksgiving.
All right, Jim.
Maybe it's the alarm clock that synchronizes people because they have to get up at a certain time.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And then they'll get tired again at the end. So maybe that's more important than the sun, which is pretty irrelevant to American culture.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Now, before I let you go, and I have actually asked Gary to close the line so that we can kind of wrap up, I want to give you as much time as you would like to tell people how they can participate in the study, maybe share anything that you haven't had an opportunity to share, and just take these moments to kind of wrap people up and really
sure.
Let them know kind of the ins and the outs of getting involved and what they need to do.
Sure. The study, people will be eligible. They can be from the ages of 18 to 70 years old. They need to be healthy. They can't be taking any prescription medications or have any major health problems.
So any medications at all?
Any prescription medications, yes. Anything that their doctor needs them that recommends they take every day and prescribes. And then we have an initial screening process to figure out just initially their health status. And then through the screening process, people will have a physical, an eye exam, and they'll have an interview with our psychologist. And then if they're determined eligible after that point and they want to participate in the study is about 2 to 4 months long. There's two inpatient visits to our lab in Boston. Anybody in any part of the country can participate. We should take care of the flight arrangements. So they won't cost anybody to pay for anything that's part of the study. We'll compensate them for anything they may pay for. And the two study visits, the first one will be 6 days long. And then after that, people return home, and they do about an 8-week home-based study where we ask them to keep sleep diaries and just tell us when they go to bed and how long they sleep during the night and whether they take naps. And then also they wear a wristwatch, which is an activity monitor. It's a light activity monitor. It monitors the light that's surrounding them and whether they're moving, so we can tell when they're sleeping at rest or they're active during the day. And then we also ask them on a weekly basis to collect all the urine that they produce over a 48-hour period. And we have a whole collection system that we've used in the past that they can use to collect these samples and then send them to us. And after that 8-week home-based study, they'll return for either a 14-day or a 28-day inpatient stay back in the hospital in our lab. And that duration will be based on the results of their first inpatient study. And we will be... Go ahead.
Is there any compensation to people for participating in the study?
Yes. People could receive if they do all of the... If they finish the 6-day, the 8-week, and if... It depends on whether they do the 14 or 28 day, because we compensate on a matter of how many days they stay in the lab. You could be compensated up to $7,300.
Okay. How should people get hold of you?
Yes. People can email me. If they're interested, they can email me at jhull, H-U-L-L, at partners.org. That's partners.org. Or they can phone me at 617-278-0857. And if they want to call toll-free, I have an 800 number. It's 1-800-722-5520. And that's in a hospital extension, so you'll just need to, I think, dial 2 for English and then put in my extension, which is 80857.
Okay. For how much longer will the study be ongoing?
This study will be going up until 2008. We've just kind of started in the last year or two, and we'll be accepting inquiries up until, I believe, the summer of 2008.
Well, I think this is a fascinating thing, Joseph, and I would love it if you would hold on to my contact information if you want to come back on the program.
Sure.
During the study, if you want to report anything, or even perhaps ask our listeners particular questions, we can promote that ahead of time and try to at least be a participating partner in the study. I think it's a great thing, and I commend you for doing it.
Thank you very much, and I would definitely love to come back.
All right. Well, we'll make it happen, and thank you so much for staying on late. Now, Joseph, go to sleep.
Thank you for everything, Marlene.
All right. Take care.
Good talking.
You too. Bye-bye. Wasn't that fascinating? I tell you what. I'm going to take a break for just a second here, and then we'll be right back with your calls at 866-666-7926.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. Call Marlena now at 1-866-666-7926. That's toll-free, 1-866-666-7926.
Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. Oh, yes, indeed. Your listening is our business. Your sleep habits are our business. And right now, your calls are my business at 866-666-7926. It's about 12 minutes past the hour. If you're listening to this program at any time other than 10 to 11 in the east, 7 to 8 in the west in North America, or 2 to 3 on a very early UTC Monday morning, it's repeat, and we just want you to put your feet up, enjoy the show, and maybe by the end of the show, the Pineapple Express will find its way to Seattle. I don't know. Hi there, you with Marlena. Who's this?
Pineapple Express.
Ah!
Hey, Marlena. Gerald. Hey. It's low 90s, upper 80s, low 90s here
well,
in Phoenix.
Well, it's like 60-something here, and we're supposed to have this Pineapple Express come in that's supposed to be big wind, big rain, and warm weather. Well, you know, I'm so disappointed. It wimped out.
Aww.
I know, it's a bummer. I want to see, it like comes in, you know, from the Hawaiian Islands and across the Pacific. I wanted to see if I could smell the pikaki and the, you know, the jasmine. There's nothing that smells as good as Hawaii. Oh man. But anyway, what's on your mind, sir?
Well, we just, thought that all the discussion about sleep was interesting, and I thought I'd give everyone an update on my eye surgery.
Yes.
So it's been 2 weeks now, and the eye is healing well, and my cornea transplant is doing well. It hasn't rejected, but I'm having some interesting vision problems, which maybe I will get some answers this coming Tuesday when I see the retinal surgeon again. But
why? What's happening?
Well, I have almost no central vision, and there's only a really small sliver in the right-hand side of my eye. If I look really hard to the right, I can see really clearly, but otherwise it's pretty bad.
Wow. And now, how much did you see before the surgery?
Just a very small amount, some color, some shapes, but I had lost, even with that, I'd lost almost all the definition to things. Some of it's back, but it's really weird. The way it is now is actually really kind of distracting and actually kind of less usable than even before.
When you made the decision to do the surgery, well, let me ask you this. Was it a decision or was it a medical necessity, first of all?
It was a necessity because of the detached retina.
Okay, so, but if you had let it go, then you would have lost all of your sight?
I could have. I mean, the retinal surgeon, when he went in there and he did the laser surgery to fix the retina, he said that there weren't any holes and tears, but had I waited, it could have been worse.
Were you afraid when you were facing the surgery that you might lose more than you might gain?
Definitely.
That's a scary thing. I'm totally blind. I have two artificial eyes. So, you know, to me, I've never had to face that, but that's a very frightening prospect, I should imagine, for anyone who's looking at eye surgery.
Well, it's always a real possibility, for me. I only have one functioning eye and it's a small amount of sight, understand. It's probably 1 or 2% of what everyone, you know, what a sighted person has. And I didn't realize how important it was until over the past couple of years I really started losing it. And the eye's healing from the surgery, and actually my cornea transplant isn't rejecting, which is really, really, really a good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm worried. I'm really concerned. And what's that, Karen?
You know, we can't hear her. So can you say what she's saying?
I'm talking very quietly. I'm sorry. I was just saying. I think it's mostly healing. Because my sight towards the end was very similar to how Daryl's seeing now. But it is a really frightening experience, but you have to take the risk, because the way you look at it is, if you don't have the surgery, you very likely will lose it. So you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
But possibly to gain. So I can, Daryl has been through that. I have, and I'm sure a lot of blind people have been through some type of surgery for their eyes. But I would imagine
there is a lot of anxiety. So you'll find out on Tuesday, Daryl, is what exactly will you find out? I mean,
Well, they're going to try to do a visual field test and try to see if they can figure out what's going on from a retinal perspective, because the cornea surgeon says, well, you know, as you know, after you have a cornea transplant, this is number 5 for me in this eye, believe it or not. When you have a cornea transplant, the optics change as the cornea heals.
That's like if a sighted person was wearing glasses, their prescription of their glasses changes.
Yeah.
So that
their
eyes
change as
it's playing. Yeah. But I'm not sure that it doesn't really feel like to me that that accounts for what's going on.
As I tell Daryl, it takes several weeks and months for an eye to heal. I would have surgery and would go months without seeing it and suddenly be able to see.
And I'm hoping that happens because this is really, 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 really frustrating.
Yeah. Well, we hope it happens too, because it's, you know, you've invested so much into this, and of course we want nothing but the best outcome for you.
Hey, I wonder if these sleeping issues, I wonder how they affect people who are partially sighted, if they do at all.
You know, Marlene, I was thinking about that because for half my life I was partially sighted, and my sleep was pretty normal.
And then
I went totally blind, and my sleep was very messed up. I was so confused. I didn't know what day it was because I didn't know Braille.
Well, maybe you should contact Joseph and ask him about that.
We will certainly. We didn't get a chance to call in, but I was curious about that.
Yeah,
and I just I just concluded that it was just something to do with depression and anxiety and my death. And it took quite a number of years for me to get a normal
relatively normal sleep pattern.
Yeah.
I still have sleeping. It takes me about 45 minutes to fall asleep, and I need some kind of noise.
There you go, for your pole.
Yeah, good. What about you, Daryl? Do you need noise?
No, it's not required for me.
I can easily fall asleep to a TV. Like, if I just, I don't plan on, like.
But here's the deal, guys, okay? I think that it's really hard when there's a lot of changing going on in the noise. So, like, if you're watching TV or listening to the radio and they have a lot of commercials.
Oh, no, that doesn't bother me.
What's that, Marlena?
That doesn't bother me.
Wow.
Well, yeah. The commercial is much louder than the program that you're watching, so that can interfere, but it has to be at a normal, low, but not too low.
Yeah.
I don't like silence.
All right.
Interesting.
And Daryl, before I let you go, you want to talk about Main Menu this week, since Dr. Bishop isn't,
Main Menu is going to be on, and it's going to be 2 hours of Main Menu Live.
Yeah.
And we're going to have Larry Skudkon from American Printing House for the Blind. He's going to talk all about the book part two, everybody.
And I can't wait because, I understand that there's also going to be a new Victor player coming round soon. That's
a Money Talks update.
That's
a special edition of the Icon.
Yeah. I just bought Money Talks. It's great.
Yeah.
I love it. So. All right, you guys. Well, you take care and get some sleep.
All right.
All right. Take care, you guys. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. I know that each of you, along with me, wish Daryl the very, very best outcome on Tuesday. Daryl is a fascinating person, and I may talk with Daryl and talk about putting Daryl on the spot, but I may talk with Daryl about being a guest on my show at some point. Daryl has an amazing story to tell, I think. What little I know of Daryl's story, so... there you go, 866-666-7926. I've been spending the day today. Well, of course, I had a nap. I had to do that. And I usually do, before the show, try to lie down and charge my battery in the event that, you know, I had, like last week when we thought we weren't getting any calls and the phone was still. And, you know, Gary explained to me afterwards that the website that we use has gotten so confusing that, you know, he quickly went in and thought that he had enabled when in fact it had disabled the phone. So, he's sitting. He's chained himself to his computer in there. I suspect he is blinded by the website this this week. But he did feel badly and wanted to let folks know what the heck had happened. It was just not an oversight. It was clearly just an error. But so I try to charge up my batteries before the show, and I try to get some sleep and, you know, come in fresh. But today, before I did that, I spent a lot of my day formatting a PDF file, which is an instruction manual that I downloaded. And, man, I tell you, even with a Braille display, it's like, that is mind-numbing work. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena.
Hey,
Dale.
Dale, the man at Seeing Eye.
Freezing. Let me tell you, the Seeing Eye, they really go to great extents to get us trained in all climates.
Yeah.
You little
sweetie from Texas, you're not used to that, are you?
I tell you what, you know how it is. This boy, 50 degrees or lower, this boy's freezing.
I know. Well, we don't want to hear about you. We want to hear about your partner. Tell us the whole deal.
He is a beautiful little black lab named Dean.
Dale and Dean.
Dale and Dean. And what's really cool is I've got two twin cousins that are named Dean and Dale. Together again.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
His birthday is, what, January the 7th of 05. So he's just a couple, just a little over 2 years old. But just sweet as a bug in a rug. And the bonding process has started, you know.
Yeah.
At first, I thought, this dog's broken. His tail doesn't wag.
Yeah.
But now that tail's beating me to death.
When did you get him?
Got him Monday night.
Monday night.
We got into town Saturday, so, you know, I had to find that. You were talking about doing that PDF stuff, you know?
And yeah.
I was, like, looking all over the house for the manual to my cane and how to operate that crazy thing.
The manual to your cane.
How do you drive this? What's up?
Let's see. How do I unfold it?
Yeah. Now, what? Which end? So that was, you know, after 10 years of using a dog and then 2 days of using a cane, I was happy to put that dude up again.
Wow.
So, yeah, everything's going just marvelous.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, what did you think when you first saw Dean?
I was like, wow, he's very small.
Oh, is he?
You know, the first thing that went through my head was he was just a little bit smaller than Kelsey.
Ah.
Well, a lot smaller. You know, Kelsey's about 95 pounds.
Yeah.
He's 66, so.
Oh.
And and then we came down to the room, and I sat down on the floor, and he pronounced, you know, set his butt on me and kind of wallowed around a little bit. And I thought, you know what, this is going to be really cool. So then, you know, you do the typical inspection, you know, just kind of feel him all over and pet him and hug him and love him. And he's got some big old floppy ears and big brown eyes. And we've had a lot of comments on how cute his face is. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, just happy. But I tell you what, he pulls like a Clydesdale.
Well, good. That'll keep you in shape, buddy.
Yeah. So we're cruising on down through the streets. And, yeah, everything's great. Everything's great. Very good about corrections. You know how it is the first few days. You know, they're not. His trainer was 5'2 and 100 pounds. So he's got a lot of learning to do about clearance. And I'm like, Dean, I'm big, man. But, you know, ironically, it's not the height clearance. It's the width clearance. So
yeah.
It's getting, you know, it's getting better every day. But still learning a little bit about that. But,
you know, and I have a really funny story about that with Agnes. You know, she's pretty much got it down now, but not too long after I got home with her, I had to attend a meeting at a hotel, and I walked through a narrow door, and it's one of these doors with the bar, you know, that sticks out that you push to open.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Well, she just about got me cleared, but my arm bumped the bar.
Right.
Well, she had been getting so many not corrections, but you know, rework. You know,
right.
Make a backup. She bumped my arm on the bar. She stopped and she backed up. She she didn't even wait. She was like, "Oh boy, I screwed up."
Let's do it again, Mom. I'll get it right.
Yeah, I'll get it right, Mom. I promise.
That's funny. Now, I guess it was Friday we were walking, you know, just a basic little route first, and he turns his head and he's looking down an alley, and all of a sudden he looks forward and here comes the building at the other side. So he tries to jump, you know, right around it. He ended up taking himself out. So we reworked that, and he gave himself a lot of clearance the second time
around. Yeah.
But yesterday we had our first solo, and we had to, you know, walk the route. But they were having their St. Patrick's Day parade here in Morristown a week early because of the huge parade, you know, in New York City.
Sure.
So we definitely had a lot of, I mean, it was great. I mean, people and vending stands and, you know, it really put a little extra emphasis on his work, you know, walking that solo.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, we did great. I mean, one little mistake, he tried to get me recruited. You know, the Army recruiters had a little canopy thing set up. Next thing I know, I hooked that with my arm, and the guy's out there, you know, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I go, "Who are you?" You know? He told me, I was like, salute, and they say, "We're moving on."
Yeah, you better watch out, Dale. They're starting to take anybody now.
That's right.
You know?
I want to drive the tanks. Give me the tanks, man.
Yeah.
But,
you
indeed. I'm so excited, and it's going to be happy, very happy, very satisfied. And, you know, the love is there. I was worried about the bonding and, the memory of Kelsey. And, well, you know, just knowing, you know, of what Kelsey and I worked. But, you know, the one thing I noticed, too, is how lax, I guess, for lack of a better word, that I've kind of gotten. Yeah, or just the comfortableness of Kelsey and I being a team for so long.
Sure.
Little things you forget, you know, pausing at the up ramp or, you know, up curb, you know, little nuances like that.
I once had a guide dog trainer tell me that the hardest students are the retrains.
Oh, yeah.
Because we get all these bad habits, you know.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And I mean, it hit me like, you know, it kind of made me think like, like when you're driving a car, you know, you get all these bad habits driving and then, you got to go take your test again and it's time to, oh my gosh, clean them all up.
Hand
it 10 and 2 and, you know, nada, nada, nada. But, one thing they have here is a new hybrid. You know, the Toyota hybrid car?
Yes.
Boy, those are like death on wheels.
Yeah.
They are totally impossible to hear.
Are they really absolutely silent?
Absolutely silent.
Oh my gosh.
It sounds, now I don't know if there's any golfers out there or people that have played golf, but like an electric golf cart, when it's rolling, you can hear the wheels.
Yeah.
I mean, when they brought it out in the parking lot and kind of demoed it for anybody that wanted to go out, and you could hear the tires in the parking lot with no other sound. But when you're out on the road, and, you know, they were doing traffic checks for us, and, you didn't even know it was coming. You know, all of a sudden, Dean is like, you know, putting on the brakes and backing up, and I'm like, what, you know, and, Steve, our trainer, was like, that was the hybrid, and I was like, wow, that is dangerous. Now, I've heard they're going to be trying to do something to add a little bit of sound to them so that, you know, the visually impaired can hear them.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that, so I hope that you're right.
I was like, gosh, let's just throw an extra lug nut in the hubcap or something.
Yeah, something, anything.
Make it roll on.
Yeah,
but good news is the weather's looking up. We're going to be in the 60s, so I've been wearing shorts the whole time, you know. It's a state of mind.
Oh, gosh.
Have to find my flip-flops, then we're back in town, you know.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah,
right.
Candace is calling me and saying, oh, it's like, you know, 82, and I'm like, ah! We've got a wind chill of 93. Oh, my golly. I forgot what it was like to have your nose fall off.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Dean and Dale, we're doing good. Very excited. I mean, I'm just, the bond is taking place, and it's happening a little bit quicker than I anticipated, which is equally pleasant. That makes
that's
the rest
wonderful.
Of the stuff really happy.
That's
really good.
That's wonderful.
But,
well, I was just going to say, I wish you many good trips.
Oh, we will have many great trips. I know that. And just like you and Agnes, I mean, you know, it doesn't take long.
No.
We've got the personality. We're going to blend and we're going to make it work. You know? And Agnes isn't squeaking tonight, huh?
No, I don't. In fact, she's making me worried. I don't know where she is.
It's like the child. We don't hear the kids. What's going on?
Yeah. Where's the kid? Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, everybody, too. Next week on Cooking in the Dark, we have a special Gone to the Dogs.
Oh.
We make a bunch of little dog biscuits and cat biscuits and stuff.
Oh, Agnes will have to listen.
Yes. And let me tell you, I mean, cover Agnes's ears. I tried one. We'll leave them for the dogs.
Agnes just walked in. She's
okay.
Very interested. Yes,
what? Somebody
yes,
said food?
Yeah, somebody said food. Here she is. She just put her head on my lap.
All right. That's great. Well, hey, I loved listening to the sleep stuff.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating stuff?
That is really
stuff?
Fascinating.
Yeah.
With the hour change and stuff for us up here, I mean, trying to get on, you know, Eastern time from Central time. And
yeah.
We
and
don't
then,
have anybody from
yeah.
your side of the country this year, I mean,
yeah.
in this class.
Yeah.
So that would be a really tough adjustment. But,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's like snatch a nap when you can, that's for sure.
It's crazy.
It's great. All right. Well, hey, thanks.
Well, hey, do me a favor, and when you run into Jim Koch, tell him that I said hello.
I will do that.
If you see my friend Lucas Frank, same thing.
Saw him. I asked him, are you doing traffic checks? And, of course, you know Lucas. He's like, nah, you know, one fatality, and they take the car away.
Yeah, that's right.
What a great, he's, yeah. Awesome.
I love Lucas.
Awesome
Lucas is wonderful.
Guy.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, take care.
Going so you can yak at some more folks. And
Dale and Dean, the dynamic duo.
That's it. Yeah,
all right.
No fear. Dean the dog is here.
Oh, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Now, that is a wonderful call. I had hoped that Dale would call in tonight. I knew that he was going to try. But, of course, I also understand some of the vagaries of being at guide dog school. And, boy, sometimes your time just isn't your own. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Just a quick question again. I'm wondering what kind of, about the sleep thing, what kind of jobs do people do who have this crazy sleep business going on? Because I'm currently not employed, but I'm just curious as to what I should look into because, you know, I'm thinking a full-time thing where I'd be going out somewhere would be kind of difficult sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I have always had sleep issues, and, I mean, I worked full-time for probably 30 or more years, and I found that having that schedule helped with some of my sleep issue.
Huh.
So, I mean, you know, now that I do consulting and contract work and I can do a lot of work from, you know, from home and in my pajamas and at 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping to find because I'm a serious night owl and it's just kind of,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
harder to function during the actual day part of the thing.
Yeah.
And it's harder to move my schedule back than it is to move it up forward further.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I don't think that I found that it kept me from working, but that was just my experience.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I had a summer job a few years ago, and it still happened, and so I'm thinking, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. Let's see what other people say.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to the Marlena program heard on ACB Radio Mainstream and WTND LP Macomb 106.3. All right. Oh, we're going to get some music in there that we don't want to get. 866-666-7926. There was a lot of sibilances there, weren't there, huh? Oh, they'll fire me. I really did find, I think, that having more of a schedule actually maybe helped me. So, I don't know. I don't know what, maybe there are some folks out there who do have sleep issues and who are working. How do you deal with it? I think that might be more the question. How do you deal with it? Hi, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena.
Yeah.
It's your buddy, Debbie.
It's my buddy, Debbie.
From east of the mountains.
From Snow Haven, Washington.
Oh, my God, yes. But we're getting rid of it. It's going away.
Yeah, now, well, we didn't get our Pineapple Express, and I'm distressed.
Well, I'm sorry. You can come here and enjoy mud season.
I don't want mud season. I want a Pineapple Express.
Okay.
So did you hear the sleep portion?
Unfortunately, I didn't.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know, because we totally spaced out that it was starting at
six, not five. I wanted to respond to the last caller. I've had sleep difficulties forever, and I worked at IRS, and the joke on the bus was, are you going to sleep on the way to work? So I would sleep on the way to work, and then, now, where we worked, nobody else came onto our floor except the people that were on the phone, so I could do this. At break, I would sleep on my guide dog's bed beside my guide dog. I would curl up with Artemis.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I would do that at lunch sometimes.
Now, how did you wake up? Did you have an alarm clock? Or?
Yeah, on my Braille light, you know, I set the thing. And also, my quad mates got to the point where they would just, you know, Debbie, get up, get up, get up. You're going to be late. Get up.
Oh, my gosh.
But I did have one really unfortunate experience. I'd had a really bad night, and I had errands to run at my break time and lunch time, so I didn't get my little nap. So after lunch, I'm sitting there, and I'm really trying hard to stay awake. This guy came on the phone, and I woke myself up saying, roast. And he said, what? And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I was just clearing my throat.
Oh, my gosh. So you're actually falling asleep on the call.
Yeah. And that's when I went to the doctor and said, you have to give me something. I don't really care what it is, but you have to give me something.
Now, and I actually referenced you in the first hour, but I didn't obviously mention your name, about the Roomerang that you, the whatever that stuff's called. What is it?
Rosarum.
Rosarum. Yeah, I was saying rummer and like rum runner. And Joseph didn't really have too much information about sleep aids, but do you find that that's helping you now?
Well, it was, but now I'm going through a change again, and it's not so much. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think I want to do Ambien. I don't want to wake up frying eggs and bacon in the middle of the night, you know? Especially since I'm on Weight Watchers. That's just not good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Joseph said that there, and you might want to listen to the replay, because he said that in blind people without light perception, let's see if I can get it right. Our circadian rhythms change and get sort of further from our body clocks for periods of time, and then they work their way back again for a period of time.
Right, and that's what they told me at OHSU also when I was part of their sleep study.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of their findings also. And I guess I must be working away from my body clock, and the Rosarum is no longer able to, because now I'm waking up every morning at 3 o'clock.
What do you do when you wake up? Do you get up?
Sometimes. Sometimes I try to lay there quietly and think quiet thoughts and, you know, pray or whatever. But if I'm too wide awake and I'm just wiggly, you know what I mean? You get that, like, I just got to get up. I can't stand laying still.
Yeah.
And I'll get up and come out and, you know, do email or surf or something until I get sleepy.
When you fall asleep at night, do you listen to something?
Yes.
See, I was taking an informal poll. Okay, is it music or talk?
Well, Craig and I watch MASH. We have the DVDs.
Yeah.
And we either watch MASH or Hogan's Heroes.
So, and that'll let you go to sleep?
If I'm really tired, it will. Now, before I was married and when I was by myself, I would listen to music. And that actually was better because I would find quiet music, you know, and that really actually was better for me. But I enjoy the MASH and the Hogan's Heroes, and, you know, when my Rosarum was working right, I did fall asleep eventually.
I don't know what Alan Alder would think about MASH as a sleeping aid.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to read a book about him soon called something about stuffing dogs. It's his autobiography. And
I've seen that. Yeah.
I got it through Volunteer Braille and Tape. It's in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, hey, listen, get some sleep.
Oh, I'm going to try, but daylight savings time always screws me up.
Oh, man, I know. I'm going to be a waste tonight.
I don't know what's going to happen. I slept all evening. I couldn't stay awake. I mean, we got home. I had to sing last night for church and then this again this morning. And I love to sing, but it uses a lot of energy, you know. And I slept all afternoon. So I hope that, and I couldn't stay awake. I mean, I'd look at email. I'd be nodding off. So I'd try reading a book. And so I hope that I go to sleep tonight. If not, you might get an email from me.
Well, there you go. I might be up to answer it, too.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Well, you take care, and you tell that wonderful husband of yours I said hello.
I will do that.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how daylight saving time affects those of us who have sleep issues. I would love to hear from someone with no light perception who sleeps just fine. I know one person has admitted that condition, that they sleep just fine. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena, this is Steve from ILA. How are you?
Hey, Steve from ILA. How are you?
Not complaints, really. Just wanted to chime in on your whole sleep thing. Being at the age of 38 now, I have come to understand and agree with that I only sleep about 4, maybe 5 hours a night. And my body has gotten used to it, I guess, as a habit. But I couldn't listen to the first hour. I wasn't home to listen to the first hour.
Oh, catch the replay. It was a good hour.
I'm going to. Just listening to the callers that you have had, I've been working not as long as you have, but been working about 20 years or so. And, you know, I think every blind person has their own little anecdotes as to how they deal with sleep. And I think one of the things that really I've come to understand is that sometimes coffee does help, and then sometimes you could drink the most leaded pot of coffee and doesn't do a thing. And I personally prefer talk over music until I can sleep through. Daryl was talking about changes in commercials and stuff, and that doesn't seem to bother me either, but it's I've noticed that I can go 17, 8, 10 hours a day with doing things and keeping active as I am. But my whole thing too, when I explain to my girlfriend about my sleeping situation, is that, hey, look, when I sit down in my recliner, or I lay down on the couch, and I've been going all day, I go, give it less than 30 seconds, and I'm going to be out like a light.
Yeah.
And just leave me there. Don't encourage me to get up and go to bed.
Yeah, because then you're awake.
Yeah. But it's, I've noticed that milk helps. I've noticed that even drinking maybe a cup of tea, green tea, sometimes helps. But it's erratic, you know. I think I'm starting to get into a point of having, like, I guess what you were describing before, my body clock going away from the norm. But it's knocking on wood. I've been on a regular schedule, and then I'm hoping that the trip to CSUN doesn't screw it all up.
Yeah, because you won't be on a regular schedule there. You know, it's just crazy the whole time.
The last time I was there, I was getting up at 4:30 in the morning California time, which was 7:30 Eastern, and I was doing emails for work and stuff like that, and then I would go down to an early breakfast and eat and come up, take a shower, and then by the time we got to the 5:30, the 7:30 cocktail hour at the Embassy Suites across the street from the Marriott, I was shot for the day. I'm like, it's time to go to bed.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you do that this year, you let me know. I'll come drink your cocktails.
Well, you're always welcome to come and drink a cocktail with me, Marlena, by all means. But it's sleep has always been an issue. And You know what's funny is that as time goes on, sighted people just can't seem to grasp the concept of, without any sort of light perception, you have no stimuli your eye has no stimuli to grasp to keep you awake. You know, someone who's sighted can look at a road, say for instance, or they can follow a set of lights and that'll keep them awake, or they'll need the cold air. You know, I don't need the cold air to keep me awake. I just need something just to keep me awake. Forget about cold air or anything like that.
Yeah, it's a joke in this house when we go in the car, because I can sleep in the car just right like that, because I have stimuli, as you say, to keep me awake, you know. And, you know,
I don't know if it's anybody else in your audience, but I have to tell you this. If I can't fall asleep, if I read 2 pages of Braille from the Braille magazine, that'll put me out, much like a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Reading Braille, because it's stimulating your brain, and it's of course, you know, those people who read Braille don't read Braille very well, but maybe you should think about it, because it does work. What's the thing from Greek mythology? It's to put the book underneath your pillow and let it seep in, the word seep in.
Yeah, the osmosis,
Put the Braille underneath your fingertips and read the Braille, and that will all seep into your head, and you'll have that information for the next day.
And look how brilliant you'll be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Great show, Marlena, and I'll see you at CSUN.
Hey, please have your friend who's the judge get in touch with me.
I will. He's probably listening.
Yeah.
And he too, also, I know, has sleep problems.
Oh, he's a good man. He's a good man.
Yeah, he is. He's interviewing tomorrow, actually. I believe he said this correctly to me, to become the chief civil judge for the borough of Queens of New York.
Wow. Wow, that's
very
cool.
Tomorrow, so I know he's a little tied up right now. But
sure, no.
I will have him get in contact with you.
Yeah, because we got quite a bit of interest in it, and actually the conversation went on for a couple of weeks, so both good and negative experiences. So, and I'd love to have him on anyway, just kind of, you know, hear his story and his courtroom experiences and how he deals with issues that his blindness may or may not present. And, good stuff. Well, I'll see you. I'll be there actually, there won't be a Marlena show next Sunday, because I will be at CSUN. We always go early so that we can be guaranteed to get a wheelchair accessible room and all that. So we take a couple of days off. We hang out by the pool on Monday and Tuesday and just kind of...
Well, I know you live in the Seattle area, Molly.
I live in Seattle,
I always joke with people. There's a dear friend of mine who's going out to CSUN for the first time as a student. He says, I want to bring my business suit and sit by the pool. Well, you know, if it gets out of being 65 degrees, maybe...
Oh,
maybe
there's
just a little warmer than that.
There's been a couple of years when it's just been glorious. Not the past two or three, but
I hope this year it is, because it's the only year that I went. It was 2 days. It was like rainy and gloomy. I'm like, what do I want to come to Los Angeles for rain and gloom? I want
that New York.
Much.
Yeah.
Have a good night, there.
All right, we'll see you in a week and a half.
You got it.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
866-666-7926. We can maybe grab one more call, and here it is. Hi, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, Marlena. This is Pam.
Hello, Pam. You'll be the last caller.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to, first of all, I want to add to your unofficial poll.
Yes, yes.
I sleep with music or talk. It doesn't matter. I have a pillow speaker from the organization represented by the previous caller.
Oh, from ILA. Now, I have a pillow speaker, too, that is yours the one with the 2 speakers in it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I didn't even see that in ILA. I saw it in, oh, my gosh, where did I see it? I don't know, somewhere. But then when it came from ILA. So I was like, oh, look at that. So I didn't even know I was buying an ILA thing.
And I like it.
I almost
bought another brand name, but, the one from C. Crane, but I like the double speaker, because this way I can just lay my head right between the speakers. The thing is, I have tinnitus. erythematous. If it's too quiet, I get this.
Yeah.
So ain't no way. I have to have something to mask.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah, and just about that pillow speaker for 1 second. What I like about the ILA pillow speaker, this is not a commercial for ILA, it's a fact. But what I like about the ILA pillow speaker is it's flat. Because here's what I found. I have the Sea Crane one with the little furry cover.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds beautiful. Actually, it may have better sound quality than the ILA. However, it isn't flat. And so sometimes the speaker itself being against my face woke me up.
Uh-huh.
But the ILA is just flat. It's great. So
yeah, well, I like the fact that the one from ILA is in stereo. So on those occasions when I might happen to use a stereo radio.
Yeah, but then you have to sleep on your back.
Oh, see, I'm better off sleeping on my back.
Oh, I can't
do that. In
that
case, I do have to lean one ear over, but I do shift during the night.
Yeah.
And I've always been a night person. And I, you know, ever since the time I learned how to pretend my mother came out. You know, I just had to learn how to pretend because I was getting punished and told I was spying on my parents.
Oh.
They just didn't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, now, does Dave have sleep issues?
He has sleep apnea and he hates the CPAP machine. Consequently, he doesn't use it most of the time.
I hate it, too. It's the most archaically designed machine. I can't use it.
Yeah, and he tries, but, and we tried traveling with it, and he got looked at and inspected by the airport security guys, and he said, this is not worth it.
Yeah.
But he also, I wanted to say that melatonin, I did not have, I took it for a time, and I did not have necessarily bad, awful dreams, and I didn't have the type of dreams that Stan the Man is alluding to, although Jonathan Mosen did say that he saw a man on TV talking about how that added, shall we say, the melatonin added spice to that portion of his life.
I see.
And Jonathan said, well, that wasn't the reason that I, but this man was raving about that. But I used to get the kind of very vivid dreams, and I'd wake up and go, what the hell was that about?
Now, how long did you take melatonin?
A few months, a couple of times.
See, because I remember, and you may remember this as well, way back in the olden days of ACB radio, I had Dr. Stephen Lockley on, who is Joseph's advisor. And the reason that I had Dr. Lockley on Blind Spot back then was that there was all this great discussion on the list about melatonin, and I remember Jonathan saying that it saved his marriage because he could sleep. And,
I remember.
And people were saying, oh, you've got to get this brand of melatonin, and it's got to have, and you need 0.5 or 10 milligrams or whatever. And so that's when I started taking melatonin, but I didn't think it did a darn thing.
I noticed that the day seemed to be longer somehow. And I know you've got to go. As far as daylight savings, it doesn't faze me in the least anymore.
Really?
And I suspect that the more light perception, which the doctors don't understand why I had it in the first place, the more I lose, the less affected I am by jet lag. In fact, this morning I slept in late, but it was a matter of, and I thought about it afterwards, it is later, but I had kind of decided I wanted to sleep in this morning, and it was a good thing for me to do, but now it's time. It's pushing 8 o'clock, and that's what it is, and that's the end of the story.
See,
I won't think about
and I am going to let you go in a minute here, but when I was doing all that traveling for HumanWare, you know, I never even changed my watch. I would just do the math, you know, because it's like, okay, it's 5 o'clock here. All right, you know.
Well, a friend and I had a very weird experience. We took a train to Fort Wayne, Indiana, well, a portion outside of Fort Wayne, actually to go out to GW Micro. to have them show me what some of the weird stuff was happening with my computer.
Tell me quick, tell me quick.
Okay. Nobody on the train knew whether what time it was, and of course, Fort Wayne doesn't do daylight saving, and nobody knew what the heck
there
time
you
it
go.
Was, and it was weird.
All right, take care.
See ya.
Talk
Bye.
To you soon. Bye-bye. That just about wraps us up for tonight, and as I say, I won't be doing a show next week. And we won't have a show the following week. So what we will do is we will present some of the best of Marlena for you. When we come back in April, we've got some great things lined up. We'll start our convention coverage. Yes, indeed, it's time to start talking about the ACB National Convention in Minneapolis. And we've got some other irons in the fire that we're working on. So it's going to be a good April. I want you to take care, get good sleep for the next 2 weeks, and thank you so much for listening to the program. I want to thank the team that helps me put all this together, all the way from Australia to Arizona, with a stop in the other room to Gary the Board Guy. If you want to get a hold of me, it's Marlena, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, @acbradio.org. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Sweet dreams.